Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
So today we're going to learn about positioning yourself properly for the Seder. Reclining is actually the subject. The subject is a Seba. And we're going back to the Gemara, going back to the source, and seeing for what reclining or when reclining is and is not required. In some ways, when you learn the Gemara and you understand the Gemara's kind of parlance and question and answer about when one does recline and one does not recline, one actually comes to an understanding of what a Seba is. But I think I'm going to give a little shortcut for you guys. I'm going to give you a little bit of background, and then when we learn the Gemara, you'll appreciate it. It'll be much clearer to you. So the first thing you have to know is that on the night of Pesach, we have this responsibility, obligation, if you will. It's a Mishnah. It's in page 99, side B in Maseches Pesachim. And the Mishnah says that a person should not eat on the night of Pesach ad sheyesef, until he reclines. Okay. So the Gemara doesn't tell us when we're supposed to recline, when we're not supposed to recline. The Gemara gives us a general notion that we should be reclining on the night of Pesach. Why should we be reclining? The Mishnah doesn't really explain. We're going to take a look and see what Rashi will explain on the Gemara that we're going to learn tonight. Rashi says that this is kederech b'nei chayrin. This is the manner of people who are exhibiting liberty, or living freely and luxuriously. And the Rambam says some very similar words, but the Rambam adds another nuance. I may be doing this a little bit backwards, but I think I want to share with you the background of what's going on here before we go into the details. So the Rambam in the 7th chapter of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, which deals with the part of Pesach we fulfill today, not the Kachim part, not the part of Korbanot, which is in a different book, Sefer Korbanos. The Rambam divides the issues of Pesach in half. And the Rambam, when he talks about the concept of what you're supposed to do on the night of Pesach, he introduces this in Halacha Vav by saying that B'chol Dor V'Dor in every generation, which we're familiar with that because it comes from the Haggadah, he says, not like the words of the Mishnah, Chayiv Adam Lirei Sesatzmai, the person has to see themselves, but the Rambam modifies that and he says, Chayiv Adam Laharei Sesatzmai, a person has to show himself. Ki'ilu Hu Ba'atzmai, as if he himself has gone out of the Shibud in Mitzrayim. In other words, that he is responsible for demonstrating that Exodus from Egypt is not a historic footnote or something that once took place, but rather that this is something that's ongoing. What do you mean it's ongoing? It's ongoing because I'm free today. I'm able to express myself freely today. I'm able to serve Hashem freely today. Because there was an exodus, because there was a Yetziyah Mitzrayim. In other words, that the whole concept of being able to celebrate Pesach properly is to demonstrate that the freedom of yesteryear affects my life today. And that I'm demonstrating and I'm showing this. For if it wasn't the freedom from Mitzrayim, as the Me'iri says, if we didn't go out of Mitzrayim, well, then we would still be Mishubadim Hayinu Lefarei B'Mitzrayim. We wouldn't be able to sit and luxuriate and enjoy a Seder and spend time in Avodas Hashem as we do. That's the words of the Me'iri. And the Rambam is very, very clear in emphasizing this idea that we have to demonstrate it. And the Rambam says, Shanemar, because it says, V'oisanu Hoitzi Misham. He took us out of there. The obvious question is, what's the proof? Okay, how does that show? How does that show that a person has to demonstrate? Doesn't seem to have anything to do with. There's nothing about that pasuk that's demonstrative or necessitates a position or an attitude or a way of positioning oneself. So how do you know you have to see it? So the Rebbe's answer to this is that what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says Oisanu Hoitzi. God took us out. In other words, I have to view this in a dynamic fashion. Hashem took us out means Hashem took me out. We are taken out. And because Hashem took us out, that's why we're exhibiting freedom. That's why we're showing ourselves in this way. So this is how the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim should be told, that it should be communicated, not only verbally, but also in body language. The way I'm positioning, the way I'm leaning, the way I'm expressing myself on the night of Pesach is demonstrative of this concept of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, this means really, first and foremost, that it should be visible to others. Just like one actually has to verbalize to others. What happens if there's nobody to verbalize to? What happens if somebody's by himself? So there's halachas about this. You still have to speak. It says talk to yourself. It's the one time a year. Talking to yourself is not a sign of insanity. It's a good thing. So just like one has to talk to himself, the same thing that Amon would speak about body language. Which is really interesting because in modern times we know that something like 80% of the message that's delivered has nothing to do with the words being used. A large volume of it is inflection. A larger volume is facial expression and body language. So this is something we know today. Communication experts know today, and they teach those whose responsibility is to communicate that they should not only use words effectively, and not only they should use inflection, but that they should use body language appropriately. And for some people, that comes naturally. Some people, words come naturally. For some people, body language comes naturally. They're able to express themselves. On the night of Pesach, we have to communicate. That's our job. Our job is to teach. Our job is to share. Our job is to pass on the legacy. And because of this, not only do we speak words that speak about freedom, not only do we say, yes, we would have been in Mitzrayim, we would have been in a slave mentality, we would never have become Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, a holy nation that serves Hashem. So not only do we verbalize that, but we actually demonstrate it. And this is really important to appreciate. And the Rambam, after telling us this, He says, "Valdavar zet tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu." This is what God commands in His Torah. "V'zacharta ki eved ha-yisa," that you were a slave, not eved hayu aves of avotecha, your ancestors lived. Eved ha-yisa, you were a slave. "Kiloimar kilo ata be'atzmecha ha-yisa eved," as if you were a slave, as if you went out of Mitzrayim. "V'yatza lachedus v'niftis," and the Rambam then begins the next halacha. "Lefichach," what does "lefichach" mean? Therefore. Lefichach, therefore, kishaseyed adam balay lazeh, when a person is going to eat on this night, tzarech lechel, he has to eat, velishtais, and he has to drink, v'hu meisev, derech cheros. And he is reclining, or he's posturing, that in a way that reflects the concept of freedom. And then the Rambam goes on to talk about wine, but that's we'll talk about that in a different class. So this is a little bit of very important background to what we're going to talk about tonight. Some of the other Rishonim add very interesting nuances when we talk about the notion of being able to express ourselves or to assume the correct posture. So firstly, I should tell you that in the Yerushalmi, in the 10th chapter of the Jerusalem version of the Talmud, is a different expression used. It says that derech avodim, it contrasts. Our Gemara doesn't contrast it with Derech Avadim. Our Mefarshim and our Gemara talk about Derech Cheres, the positive definition of freedom. Behave like a free person. Behave in a luxurious fashion. But in the Gemara, in Yerushalmi, it says that Avadim eat on the run. They nibble. They don't sit down for a meal. So therefore, because Avadim don't do that, and by contrast, you said, we, when you're free people, we have time, we sit down, v'kan misubim, here we do sit down in that fashion. So that's why we should eat in such a way. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos actually emphasizes that. And the Rambam says further that we should do kederech shamalachim v'hagdeilu moichlim. We should eat the way the royalty eats, the way people who are nobility. That's the manner of nobility. And there's a really interesting medrash that says that when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, it says the language is hirbitzam, that the Eibishter like sat us down. It's like, you know, you have a guest, you sit him down. He sat us down, or he reclined us. Kederach hamalachim revutzen al mitaseim, that the people were sprawled luxuriously upon their sofas. And because of this, because we have this concept, this medrash, so the Rishonim build on it, the Erchus Chaim and others build on it, this idea that is what's required to reenact, if you will, the going out of Mitzrayim. There are some communities that have customs of people putting matzah on their back and going outside and knocking on the door and do a whole dog and pony show, like a reenactment. And that's, you know, that's all part of the concept of conveying the message in multiple ways so that the children and the recipients of the message, of the ideas, will be able to absorb it, appreciate it, and learn it. Or as I mentioned last week, as Rabbi Sachs says, some things cannot be taught, but they can be caught. So it's contagious. You have to be able to convey this. So that's a little bit of background. We'll come back to some of the commentary afterwards, but let's now go into the actual Gemara. The Gemara says, Daf Kuf Ches Amid Aleph, about halfway through the page, the folio page of the Gemara, side A, page 108. Itmar, we learned. Matzah, Tzarech Heseba. Matzah, the consumption of matzah, the bread of affliction. I'm saying that purposely. we need to recline. Morar, the bitter herbs which are eaten on the night of Pesach, ein tzarech haseba. We do not need to recline. Okay, what's the difference between matzah and morar? We just heard about one should recline or assume a posture of freedom and of luxuriating when it comes the night of Pesach. So Rashi says, matzah tzaricha haseba, matzah, for matzah we must recline, and I quote, this is Rashi, ki b'nei chorin, like people who are free, shehu zecher legeula. That in effect becomes a vivid memory of the redemption. I'm gonna postulate that Rashi is leaning on the Medrash when he says that. When he talks about zecher legeula, he talks about the position we occupied when we went out of Mitzrayim. Even though there's the literal meaning, it says we raced out of Mitzrayim as fast as we could, but there was also an element of reclining and of relaxing, and because there's an element of reclining and relaxing, so that's why Rashi tells us this concept, he conveys this idea that one should assume that kind of posture when eating matzah. Because the matzah is, as Rashi says, the whole purpose, the point of the matzah is a zecher legula. The matzah itself reminds us of going out of Mitzrayim. We read in the Torah that the Jewish people are eating matzah on the night of Pesach, and that the next day, once again, there's this discussion of matzah. So matzah is the food, or not only the food, but also the object, like the show and tell. We point at the matzah and say, this is the bread, this is the wafers, this is the crackers, this is the matzah that we ate when we were leaving Mitzrayim. Okay, so that's the story with matzah. Rashbam, by the way, was also printed on the Gemara page, so I guess we'll share with you what Rashbam says too. He says that when it comes to matzah tzricha haseba, he says, kisha oichel matzah shel mitzvahs laila harishayin. Rashbam adds a very interesting nuance. He says, when you eat matzah, which matzah? The matzah of the first night, which is eaten as a mitzvah. With that is done, kibnei chedim shehu zeicha legula. So Rashbam adds to his Zaydi's, to his Saba's words, a very interesting nuance. He says, which matzah? The matzah that's eaten as a zecher legula. Not every matzah that's eaten, or not every time you munch on the matzah, is it necessarily going to be a zecher legula. When you eat matzah as the mitzvah of matzah, that's when it's a zecher legula. So that matzah that you're eating is a zecher legula. That matzah one must eat in the proper posture, in the posture that demonstrates this concept of freedom, luxuriating.
Second night, you don't need to recline.
Yes, of course you do. Second night is also a mitzvah. It's also a mitzvah. No, he means the first night is biblical, the second night is rabbinic. He means the matzah that's eaten as a mitzvah. And by the way, there's a machlekes rishonim, a huge dispute amongst rishonim, where the main matzah is the matzah that's eaten by motzi matzah, the beginning of the meal, or the most important matzah is the afikoman. And this has bearing on halacha, God forbid, a situation where you only have one kezayit of matzah, which could even happen in today's age. Somebody should have only one kezayit of shmura matzah. Where should they eat it? And the halacha is, you only have one kezayis, you eat it for afikoman. So Rashi's opinion is that the real matzah is the afikoman matzah. At any rate, both of them are necessary, and the way we generally follow is the matzah for the afikoman is eaten zecher for the korban pesach, is eaten in lieu of the paschal offering, which was a mitzvah to eat, and all of that is part of what a Jew is required to do. So we're obligated to eat a kezayit of matzah, an ounce of matzah, at moitzi matzah, and we're obligated to eat a kezayit, an ounce of matzah, when we're eating the second time at the. So that's when Rashbam says, when you're eating that matzah, the matzah which is an expression of freedom, the matzah which is eaten as a zeichel l'churban, that's when we're trying to not only speak it out, but act it out, and that's when the haseba is relevant, meaningful, and required. However, says the Gemara, maror, for the bitter herbs, ain't tzarech haseba. Why don't you need a haseba? Says Rashi, it is not a zecha lecheiros, it's not a zecha to freedom, the maror is not eaten as a zecha legeula, shehu, because it is zecher la'avdos. It reminds us of the bitterness of slavery. It's the bitterness of slavery. And since it reminds us of the bitterness of slavery, so therefore, why would you want to lean then? The whole point of leaning is you want to demonstrate that I'm doing something which is as a free person. But the murder is merely there for the purpose of framing it. That's interesting. I mentioned to you the Talmud Yerushalmi says that the people who are avadim, slaves, eat on the go. But free people, they eat luxuriously. They sit to eat. They have a, let's sit down for a meal. So the Yerushalmi emphasizes the negative and the positive, right? But in the Bavli Gemara, the Gemara emphasizes only the positive, because the point is, when do you lean? When do you recline? When is it necessary to demonstrate or to communicate, not only verbally, but also by body language, as we saw in the Rambam and the Meiri? When is that necessary? That's necessary specifically when a Yid sits down to eat matzah, which is done for the purpose of freedom. When it says Eichel Abdus, this is not required. Okay, so everybody knows Pesach night, matzah, big ingredient, very important, item A. Item B, murr. What else is the big ingredient on the Pesach night? What's the substance, the sacred substance we consume? Wine. Wine. We have an obligation to drink 4 cups of wine. And we'll talk about that in a different class, why we drink 4 cups of wine, what that's about. But now we're talking about reclining. So the Gemara says, Yayin, how about wine? Eat my mishmei de Rav Nachman. We learned in the name of Rav Nachman. Tzorech haseba. You must recline. V'eat my mishmei de Rav Nachman. And others learn in the name of Rav Nachman. Ein tzorech haseba. You don't have to recline. This sounds very strange. Rav Nachman says you do have to recline. Rav Nachman says you don't have to recline. For heaven's sake, what does Rav Nachman say? So the Gemara says you said both. How could you say both? You know the joke they tell, that the man came to the rabbi and he said, Rabbi, what this guy is, what he told me, did this and this. The rabbi said, you're right. You're right. And then there was, the next guy came and said, you know what the other guy did to me? He says, you're right. You're also right. So his wife said to him, how could they both be right? She says, you're also right. You never get into controversy, but you don't make any sense. That's lunacy. What does it mean? Rav Nachman says, don't recline? That's right. Rav Nachman says, recline? That's right. Well, what does he say? So the Gemara says, V'lei pligi. V'lei pligi, there is not a dispute. Ho, betarti kosi kamoi. Ho, betarti kosi basroi. Ah, the question was, they're not arguing what Rav Nachman said. They were talking, the first opinion was says you're supposed to recline. It was talking about the first 2 glasses of wine. That's when you should recline. And the other was saying that the last 2 glasses is when you're supposed to recline. So we say, Amri lo lahai gisa, va amri lo lahai gisa. Clearly Rav Nachman said, 2 glasses you do recline, 2 glasses you don't recline. So the Rav Nachman, he asked the question, did he say he should recline? What's the answer? Yes, he should recline. Did he say he should not recline? Yes, he said he should not recline. When? Well, he said, the first 2 glasses he said, one thing. And the second 2 glass, he said something else. So you made the assumption that 4 cups of wine, the 4 glasses of wine, are necessarily going to be judged in like fashion. That's not correct. Rav Nachman, that's exactly his point. He said sometimes you do have to recline, sometimes you don't have to recline. Now comes the challenge. Unfortunately, nobody knows with certainty which 2 Rav Nachman said you have to recline and which 2 you don't have to recline. Now we got a problem. And the Gemara says, we're recording this. This is a question, so we record it. What's the question? The question became, well, the confusion crept in. Amri l'lahai gisa, v'amri l'lahai gisa. Some say it went one way, and some said it went the other way. Uh-oh. Amri l'lahai gisa, some said this version. Trei kosi kamoi, the first 2 glasses, the first 2 cups of wine. Boya seba, you have to lean. Why? The hashta hudaka maschala cheros. Now is when freedom is beginning. This is the story of freedom. This is the process. This is the actual reenactment and reliving of the freedom. Here's the story of the Exodus. This is where we went, and this is how it happened to us, and this is how we suffered, and this is how we were taken out of its time. That's the story of Magid. Magid is the dynamic narrative of Exodus. So when you're drinking the first cup, which is Kiddush, and you're starting to get into the Seder, and then of course you get to the second cup, and you're reading the whole Magid over that cup, so then, of course, that's the cheiros, that's the liberty. It's happening now. So when you're going to drink the glass of wine, you spoke about it, and now you're going to act it out. Can't just speak about it. Understood? It's an ongoing process. It's an I know. 1 second. This is the first approach. We know for sure that Rav Nachman made a distinction between the first 2 cups and the second 2 cups of wine. We know that for sure. This is without a question. We know that with one of them he said, you should drink and recline, meaning the concept of not only verbalizing, but also expressing in body language the process of redemption is necessary. The question was when. Rav Nachman draw a distinction between these two cups. So in the two versions, one version says, now is maschal acheros, now you're telling the story. And we learned before that when you tell the story, when you articulate and verbalize, you should also be acting it out. You should also be demonstrating it. You should be using body language to communicate. Now you're telling. Now is when the body language is necessary. Today, Kosi Basroi, the last two glasses, nobody's talking about freedom. Why not? Lebo Haseba, Madahava Hava. That was. We're free already. And this is really important. This really can only be understood as we learn the Rambam, especially as the Rebbe explains the Rambam. Because if you say that you have to do it as a free person, so then, what do you mean, madahava hava? You're not free anymore? You were free for the first half of the night, and now you're a slave again? What does that mean, madahava hava? But if we say that Dr. Amam says, laharois, you have to demonstrate, you have to communicate by means of body language, lefichach starts the next halacha, because you have a commandment, a necessity, a duty as a Jew, a sacred obligation, not only to verbalize, but laharois, to demonstrate it, lefichach, that's why you're mesiv. This makes perfect sense. So when you're telling the story, Magid, you're also going to be not only speaking it, but acting it out by leaning, by reclining. This is one approach. Va'amri lo. And another approach is lahaygiso. Adarabe! El contraire! What are you talking about, he says. Trei kasi basroi. The last two glasses of wine. Boy, yes, hey, but they have to be reclined on. Why? Hahu shait the kahavecheiros. We're finally there. It was all getting there. It was all a process. Now we're there. So now show it. In other words, according to this opinion, there's a distinction that's drawn between verbalization and body language. First you verbalize, and then after you verbalize, then you demonstrate it. According to the first opinion, the body language and the verbalization comes together. In other words, the body language is the communication that accompanies the verbalization. According to the second approach, the verbalization is the story. I told the story. Now that I told the story, so now I demonstrated and discussed and talked about the concept of me becoming cheirus, free. Now do it. Now that you got there, now laharesh, I have to show that I'm serious. As they say, put your money where your mouth is. This is just talk? Or are you real about it? Do you really feel this? Are you really experiencing it? That which you talked about. And that's the second approach. So therefore, from that approach, when should I recline? When should I have this luxurious positioning for Pesach to demonstrate my freedom, the gift that Hashem gave us of being His servants? The answer is on the last two glasses. Ahi shaita the kahava chedus, but trei kasi kamoi. He says the earlier loyboi hasei, but don't have to be leaned on. Why? The akati avadim ayinu. We're still saying avadim ayinu. We're discussing avadim v'inu esam. They tormented. They harassed. They murdered. So that's no cheirus. So that's the story. That's the question here. So what does this take us? Oh, this takes us very simple. So what do we do now? We have a problem. Okay. We have an issue.
Well, the main problem was really if it would have been you recline on the first two and you don't recline on the other two, that the cheirut is over.
There's different ways of looking at what the responsibility is. It doesn't mean that cheirut is over. The question is, when are you required to recline? So we have two approaches to this. The question now, of course, what do we do now? So hashta, says the Gemara, the itmar hachi. We have those who learned, who understood, who appreciated that the lesson of reclining, of body language, must accompany verbalization, communication that takes place through words. And on the other hand, we had another opinion that says, no, first you speak it out, and after you finish speaking it, then you actually show it. So what do we do? What do we do? Idivi bo haseba. Recline by both. Or by all. And that is the halacha, actually. Now, here's an interesting question. Interesting question is, usually, when it comes to something which is medivrei seifrim, something which is rabbinic, what do we do? Sveika de oraisa, a question which is of biblical nature, lechumra, we follow the more stringent approach. Sveika de rabbanon, when it's a question about a rabbinic ordination, sveika lekula. So why are we taking the stringent approach here? This seems to fly in the face of the basic principle that we have with regard to Torah, difference in biblical. Well, it is being stringent because you're requiring that a person should relax when he does it. So what's the pshat? So we have to say that the truth is, if you could do both, and it's not difficult, for heaven's sake, why not? What is the problem exactly? I don't want to recline. Why not? I don't want to be free. What's wrong with reclining? So if we have a situation where there's a challenge, something is difficult, the Gemara says, we're not required to make this difficulty. That's a drabanan. It's rabbinic. It's not required. But in our situation here, what is it? Just be more free. Relax more. What's the problem with relaxing? Says, relax more, relax. We're going to talk about today's day and age soon. But the truth is, we're not talking about eating, we're talking about drinking. So, but since it's not really a difficult thing, certainly at the time of the Gemara, it was not a difficult thing, it was an enjoyable thing. So if you could enjoy, what's the question then? That's what the Maram Chalva says. The question is a question, but that's what the Maram Chalva, that's what he says. Now, what does it mean, Mada Hava Hava? That's like a strange statement. The Gemara says, oh, what was. So the Tosfa says, Shekvar Amlu Geula Lufnei Asuda. We already spoke about the Geula prior to the meal. Now, Af Agafi says that nonetheless, the Matzah Tzricha Heseba, Matzah, you have to recline for, hey, 1 second. You just told me Mada Hava Hava. You just told me that since you already took care of the freedom, you already discussed it, you already actualized it, now the reclining is not necessary for the wine, and when exactly do you eat matzah? Also after Maggid. So if you eat matzah after Maggid, the same way that the third and fourth glasses of wine don't have to be reclined for, we shouldn't have to recline either for the eating of matzah. That's the question Tosfos asks. And we don't say madahavo, so he says matzah is different. Shiny matzah. Why? Shehi iker seuda yeser miyayin. The main meal of Pesach, the main eating of Pesach, that is the matzah. But that would be ridiculous. So say you're going to recline for the wine, which is at best secondary, at best. And the matzah, which is the main actor, is oh, no recline necessary. That just doesn't add up. That wouldn't make sense. And furthermore, by yayin, you already leaned for two of the glasses of wine. Okay, so you already leaned, and now it's madahava hava, now you move it to halal and nirtza and virchta mazon. Okay, so you already did it. But if the matzah, you won't recline now, when will you recline with matzah? The day before Pesach? When are you going to recline? So obviously, it's not a fair question. And it says clearly that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, we tukasav b'teira, it's written in the Teira, zecher l'cheiros, that the matzah was a vivid memory of the Exodus, of freedom. As it says, Shalihitzpik Batsekam Lahachmith Achaniglu, that Hashem did not allow the dough to rise until he redeemed them. Taisa says, hey, Afagavta have lechem oini. Not the way the Gemara explains lechem sha'oinim al dvara habe, it's the talking point piece, that you use the matzah to demonstrate, and you speak about the story over the matzah, and you can demonstrate, here's the matzah. But the typical understanding is bed of affliction, nachem oini. You're telling me that it's a geula, it's a cheiros, it's lechem oini. In today's day and age, you finished paying for matzah, you're poor already. I'm like, what? It's lechem oini over here. That's not real. So the Rambam says, nonetheless, that Tosfos says, yesh la'ochla derech cheiros. You still should eat it in a manner of reclining, of luxuriating, of being free. Because you have to, when you the matzah, you make the bracha, you're eating the matzah, you're eating the afikomen, it is lechem oini. But what does it remind us of? We don't eat it because it's lechem oini. We don't eat it because it's bread of affliction. We eat it because it's bread of redemption. It's true, there's a famous Ibn Ezra says that when I was a prisoner in India, I saw that they gave the prisoners only crackers, matzah, because they were able to subsist for longer. The body takes, it's harder for the body to digest it, so a little bit of food could last longer. There's a big question about this because we don't have any record of Ibn Ezra being in India, and others maintain that Ibn Ezra was saying in the name of somebody else. At any rate, maybe he wasn't in India, maybe he was in prison, I don't know. Bottom line is, Ibn Ezra gives us this fascinating new approach that, yes, the Jewish people as slaves in Mitzrayim were forced to eat matzah, actually. That they ate matzah. But that's like Ibn Ezra. That's even, Gemara doesn't say it even. It's a Rishon. In the Gemara, and when you read the Psukim, matzah is the bread of redemption. Maybe we use lechem oini to talk about redemption, but matzah ultimately is the memory of matzah, like the Tesfas and Ashbam and the Rashi and everybody says it's a zeicher l'geula. And the Torah describes the Exodus and describes the freedom and describes the redemption by means of the process of the matzah that was not allowed to rise. So therefore, that's not a fair question to ask. The Tesfas points out that what do you do if you forgot to recline during the wine? And so he's fake the Rabbanah now. What do you do? Right? So the Tesfas discusses whether or not one would have to go back and recline. Practically speaking, the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch says that the only case that you would have the opportunity to do so would be the second case. Practically. So the only time you actually, if you didn't remember to recline, that would be during the second cup. All right? Just to augment a little bit of what we learned about before we go into the next detail, I will share with you the language that the Alter Rebbe uses in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Tov Ayin Beis, in chapter 472, in the 7th Halacha. The Alter Rebbe borrows much phraseology from the Rambam, and he says that a person should be mechaven moishavoy, he should arrange his seating, and should do so sheyeshev beheseba, that he sits in a reclining position. Derecheros, he says. So he talks about the idea of the derecheros, the manner of freedom, which is, of course, brought down from the Rambam, and as the Rishonim say, k'derech shamalachim v'hagedoylim oichlim, the way people of nobility, kings would eat. V'vishibchol devader tzarech adam laharais es atzmai. Here, the Alter Rebbe borrows the phraseology of the Rambam, and even though in our Haggadah it says liris es atzmai, but the Pashto says, the Rebbe explains that Rambam is teaching us a halacha over here. He's not saying you have to say laharais. You say liris. But the halacha is laharis. The halacha is to demonstrate. As if ki'at, kilo'ata, yatsa mishuvim mitzrayim. As it says, bavur ze'asa Hashem li b'tzeisim mitzrayim. Val dover ze'etziv HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Hashem commanded. V'zachart ha'ki evad ha'yisa. Ata b'yatzmecha ha'yisa. V'yatsa l'cheres l'fichach. Tzarech la'ses kol ma'isa layla zed. Alter Rebbe modifies a little bit. He says, everything tonight is to be done. Derecheres in a manner of freedom. Alter Rebbe is even expanding this to beyond body language. Beyond even posturing, everything should be done in a manner of freedom, in a manner of luxuriating, in a manner which demonstrates the celebration of cheirus, of freedom, of exodus, of gula, and redemption. Okay, so the Gemara now is going to discuss positions. What position, how are you supposed to recline? On a lawn chair? You lay back on one of those. Most people think it says, "What's? Think of your dream. You know, if you're having a really stressful day, so imagine you're sitting by your private beach over there, and you're laying on your beach chair, laying back. Margarita. It's your margarita. Thank you, margarita on the right side. I take it from you. I never experienced this. Okay, see, it's a margarita. You're laying there. Yeah, it's very. Is that what we're talking about? Should bring our lawn chairs to the seder? Kind of a strange seder we have. No, everybody be laying down. Should the Gemara ask the question? We have to now have clarity. So the Gemara comes along and says, now that we established for what you must recline, farakdon leishmei esebam. A farakdon does not a position that is called reclining in the Torah, even though the chair may be called a recliner. What is a farakdon? Says Rashi. Rashi doesn't say, 1 second. In the Rashbam, it says, Farakdon means ponov klape milo. His face up. V'shoichev ala choyrov. He's lying on his back. Your lawn chair. A lazy boy. Fully extended. Says the Gemara, lazy boy is not the right chair for the Seder. Farakdon leish me'aseba. That is not a hasebo. Oh, many to show you. I'll read it to you from Rabbeinu David. Says, what is a farakdon? Hashoich avalorpoi, the person who's lying on his back. The yesh v'pirshu, there are other rishonim who learn pshat in the Gemara. Hashoich avalponov, the person who lies on his face. The person lies face down. And he brings a proof in the Gemara in Brachas. That layet ola bayaman, the gani afraka afarkid. And he's talking about somebody who's lying on his face. Although Rabbeinu David himself disputes this, And he says that if you learn the Gemara properly, it's actually talking about a Sheikh of Al Arpa. And Rabbeinu David maintains that the primary position of Fractan that the Gemara refers to is, like Rashbam says, lying on your back. Although, as we said, other Rishonim say lying on your face. And practically speaking, you may not lie not on your back, like you're in a lazy boy or a, what do they call those, lawn chairs? And you may not lay like you're in the middle of a massage, face down. That is not a good Seder position. Scratch. No good. Okay, so how should we lay? How should we recline? Well, presumably then to the side. You should be upright, but to the side. Comes the Gemara and says, Hesebas, you mean leishme hesebo. Reclining to the right, no good. That's not the Hesebo, the halachic kind of reclining we're talking about. V'leyei, not only this, Elashema yagdim kon elevashet, lest the food end up going down the wrong pipe. Why is it going to go down the wrong pipe? It's going to go down the wrong pipe because there's this notion that the top of the windpipe is covered. It has a little piece, which is called a shipui koiva in Hebrew. In English, it's called an epiglottis. And the epiglottis goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And when you take a breath, opens up, like the top of a garbage can opens up. And then it goes down afterwards. So what's going to happen is you're busy taking food down, and your epiglottis is going to fly open, and food will go into your trachea. And that's not a good thing. That's not, you should not be feeding your lungs. In fact, even putting smoke in your lungs, we know today, is a very unhealthy and dangerous thing. Most certainly to put food or drink into your lungs is a very bad thing, and it could cause what we call exfiation. God forbid a person could choke on this. And it's like, asphyxiation, pardon me. So we don't want to asphyxiate, and that's why we shouldn't recline in this fashion. Now Rashi tells us that the Shema Yaktim is referring to the fellow lying on his back, which makes a lot of sense. Because Afrakton Koi, Shemitesha Tzavari Sheikha, because his neck is leaning back, Lachaydav, Shipui Koiva, the epiglottis, usually Haseisim is Piakana, which closes the trachea, now Niftach, becomes open, Miskapel, it folds Lamaila, backwards, because you're lying back like that, Vahakana, Peshet, Lamaila, Vahamachal Nichus Sechei. So then, the trachea becomes kind of available, and it's what will happen. Some of the food might go in there, nichnak, and you will exfiate. No good. Rashbam says, no, that doesn't make any sense. We're not talking about the fractan guy. We dealt with the fractan already. This is talking about leaning on the right. And he says, after he brings down the words of Rashi, a fractan koi, and he says, Shipikoiva, he brings down the words. He says, Kach Pinish Rabbeinu Shloima, which presumably he's talking about his grandfather Rashi over here. Fekashali, he says, Amai L'samcha, Lahai, why didn't you mention this earlier? Say, don't do the fractan, because if you do the fractan, the epiglottis problem is gonna occur. And then we can exfiate. He says, it seems to me that really the issue of Lev Yaktim Karni Leveshet is when you're going to lean on your right side. Rashbam says that you lean on your right side. Avaltzad Yamin V'Niftach HaKoyver Shalpi HaKona May Elov. It'll open up, and this will cause exfiation challenges. Now, what the Rashbam means is a little bit of a mystery, because in fact, even in Rashbam's time, they performed autopsies. This is a very old science. And people cut open bodies, and they know that the food pipe and the windpipe are not side by side, but rather one on top of the other. And we know the food pipe is in the front, and the windpipe is in the back. That's just a fact. We know that. Now when you say a fracton, like Rashi said, it makes sense. The person leans back, so the windpipe could open up. Pardon me, the other way around. I'm sorry, the windpipe is in the front, pardon me. Windpipe is in the front. So here, the food's not going to make it to the esophagus, because it gets first, the windpipe is going to be there first. So that actually makes sense. But you're talking about leaning to one side or the other side, how would that make a difference? How does it make a difference? The epiglottis is going to remain closed anyway. The epiglottis will be forced open because of your laying backward position. But if you go to the right or the left, that doesn't cause the shipui koiva to fly open. So we're not sure 100% what Rashbam meant and what the Rashbam is taita, and if he says it, so it is so. It is noted that in the bronchia that goes into both lungs, that there is a different angle on the right side versus the left side. And therefore, Rashbam could be felt that because of the angle, which is less gradual or more gradual on the right side or less gradual on the left side, that leaning on the right side could, because of its nature of its more gradual way it flows into the lungs, that it could cause, in a rare instance, it could cause the concept of exviation, even though that would be not the easier natural thing. So I'm just going to tell you this is just my understanding of it. I could be wrong, of course. That's what I want you to know. It's not tell you what I'm saying, no. But I think, maybe, what is the pshat then of Rashbam? Rashbam is saying, if it was only talking about the fraktan, which for sure that's what it's talking about. Rashi says, of course it's talking about that. But what was Rashbam's question? Rashbam's question was, why do we put it after the business of reclining to the side? We should have put that in the business of being fraktan, lying on the back. That would be the most natural place to put it. So first of all, you know, we have some Rishayim who say fraktan means lying face down, and then it would not be applicable at all. Right? So for those who showing him, did not even a question. It's for sure talking about the second thing. Rashi clearly does not say that. But it would seem to me, I would humbly suggest, that even when you're not laying back, when you're laying back, for sure it's a problem. But even on the side, there is a very small chance of it being a problem then also. And because it could be a problem even in laying on the side, that's why the Gemara includes it only after it talks about the side. Of course, its primary concern would be laying a fraktan on the back, but there still would be a little more of a concern, and therefore the Gemara chose to state this after mentioning both non-halachic reclining positions. It kind of makes sense. I don't think it's a big chiddush what I'm saying. I didn't see it anywhere, but it just makes sense. That's the story of the reclining. Everybody got that? That's clear? Okay, so let's move on now. Who should recline? Now we know when we recline. We know how we recline. I gave you a whole background of what's up with the reclining altogether, you know, even the whole idea of reclining. And the question is, who should do this? So the Gemara says something very interesting. Isha etzel bailo leboy haseba. A woman who's sitting at the table with her husband does not require haseba. And this is a huge dispute amongst the Rishonim. What does the Gemara mean? Why would a woman not have to recline? We know that men and women are equally obligated in all of the observances of Pesach. You're going to say it's a mitzvah, say shazman grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah. And women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. The answer is very simple. The Gemara talks about this. The Gemara says whenever you have mitzvahs asay, which are conjoined at the hip to mitzvahs lois asay, when the Torah says, don't do this, instead do this, just like mitzvahs lois asay, the negative mitzvahs are applicable to everybody equally, so those positive mitzvahs are equally applicable. Now, the Torah says, don't eat chametz, but instead, eat matzah. So I know that a woman's obligated to eat matzah. And when she's obligated to eat matzah, all of the other things are connected to matzah, because it says you tell the story over matzah, and you drink the wine together with telling the story, which is linked to this matzah with you telling it over. And the mur is also part of the matzah sumeretim. So everything is linked to the matzah. And therefore, since the matzah is linked to chametz, and chametz is a negative commandment, so it's equally applicable for men and women. If it's equally applicable for men and women, then this business of assuming the correct posture should equally apply to men and women as well. Why did the Gemara make such a statement then? And what's the difference if she has a husband or not? How does that change anything? Part of the Shulchan Aruch falls away when you get married? What does that mean? What if a woman doesn't have a husband? What is the Gemara saying over here? So there are different schools of thought, different Rishonim who explain this in different ways. And I think it's important for you to understand that some of the halachas that the Gemara will talk about are very much relevant to the practicality of what's going on. It has to be a reflection of what's going on. Before we get to the Isha, I want to give you an example of this. The question is asked, of course, do we recline today? You say, what do you mean? Of course we recline today. The Gemara says we recline. No, actually not so. So there are many Rishonim, like the Ravon and others, who say that this whole Gemara does not apply today at all. It doesn't apply? What do you mean? You have to demonstrate freedom. That's right. And when the president or prime minister or queen or king sits down to eat, they don't do it on the couch. They maybe eat Doritos on the couch and watch television, but they don't sit and have a meal on the couch. Nobody wants to have a meal on the couch. Where do they sit? At a chair, at a table. That's what people eat. So therefore, the Ravon says, none of this applies today. This was in those days. Think back to the Greek or Roman custom, which is the prevalent customs at the time when the Gemara was formulated, at the time when the etiquette of the Seder night is arranged. And that's the way nobility was eating. So today's day, and they say, please, have a seat. Somebody invites you for a meal. Please, go to the couch. No, we hung out at the couch. Can we eat? I'm going to serve dinner at the couch. Why are we doing that? Who eats dinner at the couch? TV, it's like people eat TV dinners at the couch. That's not a normal place to have a meal. A meal you have at a table. So the Ravan says, extremely logically, that this makes no sense today. We just read that Rambam is talking about demonstrating and showing in body language. This is cuckoo stuff. It's not demonstrating in the body language of anything. He says, so what are you doing it for? So he says, nobody enjoys it. Nobody delights in it. Nobody's interested in doing it. And it's totally inapplicable today. In today's days, we don't do it. And therefore, what should we do? We should be Yeshiv Kedarke. And the Mardukhai says, Rav Yosef says, the Muki Yosef says it. Many of the important Shainim say the same thing. Don't turn not to the right. Don't turn not to the left. Eat like a mensch. Have a nice, comfortable chair. Sit at a table and enjoy. So, what does this tell us? What does this tell us? It tells us the concept of the reclining has to be commensurate to the experience. It has to, in some way, reflect it. So some of the Rishonim say, you know why a woman shouldn't lean in front of her husband? Because once upon a time, and you don't have to go back in a time machine, you can just go to actual places in the world today where they're living in a time machine, where they're living in a time warp, where they abuse women, where the society is one. There's no respect for women. In fact, an enormous portion of the world's population is living under this kind of strange, draconian reality, which we can't understand. And women are afraid of their husbands. I don't know. There's no Jewish women afraid of their husbands. The men are afraid of the women, usually. There was once such a time when, I guess, Jews were influenced by other societies. And in the Middle East, there was some women who were afraid of their husbands. So the woman afraid of the husband didn't want to express herself that way. She was inhibited. Because she was inhibited, so then it doesn't make her comfortable to do this. So she's not required to do it. That is one major school of thought amongst the Rishonim with regard to a woman leaning or not leaning over here. And how do we know this? Because the Gemara says, Isha lefne baila leiba yaseba. V'imisha chashuva, but she's a prominent woman. She runs the roost. That's a different story. Then itzricha yaseba. Then she should be reclining. So therefore, you see, that's talking about a woman who does this. So that's the way. That's what the Muki Yesu says. Others go on to talk about people having servants in the home or not having servants in the home. And everybody's enjoying the Seder. Yeah, but the poor woman, she's taking care of what's going on. So she doesn't, you know, she sits next to the kitchen. She was always running. Again, a dated reality. But there is another opinion that this kind of posturing was simply unladylike. It's unladylike. And just like today there are women who wear army boots. So then, Isha Chashuva, they some of them almost a little masculine. This wasn't a ladylike quality. And therefore, because it wasn't a ladylike quality, ladies weren't expected to make them uncomfortable. They don't want to be like the guys who sits in front of them and gets Doritos and watches television. That's a guy thing. Women are a little more refined. So this business of leaning was not it's not the way women did it. And because it's not the women that Isha Chashuva, certain women, they wore the pants, as they say, or they behaved in a way which is more masculine, okay, fine, then they should do it. So because we have these many schools of thought, and the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch says a gewaldige thing. He says, what does a woman do? He says, and this is written in the end of the 18th century. He says, V'chol ha'nashim shalanu nikrois chashuvis. Now, nashim shalanu, Jewish woman. I can't tell you that the Russian or Ukrainian or Lithuanian woman, the peasants who are being beaten by their husbands in that part of the world, but the Alter Rebbe says, ha'nashim shalanu. Our wives, he says, they're all chashuvim. They're all prominent. Oh, if they're prominent, so then why don't they lean? Then they should lean. The Alter Rebbe says, afal pichin linogu lahasev. Why? Because there's the Yeshemrim, the Mordechai, and the Ravon, and the Ravyo, who are the Sheinim, and the Muki Yosef, who say that today's day and age, there's no need to lean whatsoever. So because the whole thing is a question altogether, and because this becomes a question of a question, the whole thing is to begin with in doubt. So he says, in that case, the Alter Rebbe says, well, leave him alone. What's the point? Even Malachim, he says, even Gedolim, even nobility doesn't lean. They don't lean when they eat. They sit on a normal chair. So therefore, we follow same chis hanoshim achshav shalach. So that's why the common practice is that most women do not lean.
Is it prohibited?
No, it's not prohibited. I have an aunt who's a big feminist and has to do everything that... Okay, fine, no problem. Want to do it, do it. Makes you feel good, do it. You're not required. I could tell you, if the Shulchan Aruch told me that I didn't have to lean, I would not be leaning on the Erev Pesach. I do not find it enjoyable to drink wine like this. I don't. I do it because of the Shulchan Aruch. So if the Shulchan Aruch would tell me, you have a dispensation, rabbis don't have to lean, no problem. I won't lean. You know? So I'm like, what is your issue exactly? I'm stuck with it. But like, why should my wife have to do it? She doesn't. Why should she have to? She doesn't, that's all. But the Gemara, I mean, the people say Torah doesn't change. Of course Torah doesn't change. Torah doesn't change in that the night of Pesach, we have to demonstrate this kind of spirit of liberty and the spirit of freedom, the spirit of luxury and the spirit of royalty. True. But the question is, what is the spirit of luxury and what is the spirit of loyalty? That's the question. That becomes the question. So if people are used to doing things a certain way and that's royal, well, then that's the royal thing to do. There are halachas about things which are oilal shulcham alochim, whether you would be served. This is something people would serve at a royal table, right? And the halacha could change from one place to the next because, you know, before people came to North America, corn was in Europe, was considered food for the animals. They grew corn, but they fed it to the pigs. In North America, the pilgrims, they saw all of a sudden, whoo, look at the natives, the indigenous peoples of North America, who the Europeans occupied, and then they lecture Israel about occupation. That's just a little sidebar. So they saw over there, they said, how are they eating? They're eating corn on the cob. And the Europeans tried it. They said, this is marvelous. Let's have a Thanksgiving, you know. And they started eating corn on the cob. And all of a sudden, Europe started hearing that the people who go across the ocean to the next hemisphere, they become crazy. They start eating animal food until they tasted the corn on the cob. They said, this is pretty good. And today, everybody eats corn on the cob. So we say, once upon a time, corn was not oila al shulchan malachim. In today's day and age, corn is certainly oila al shulchan malachim. Of course it is. Everybody eats corn, right? So it's a different, then we go into, this is relevant for a totally different set of halachas. All I'm trying to say is, Torah doesn't change. The principles will change. The realities may change. The Torah reflects and tells us how we should deal with certain realities. If realities change, well then, the point was to be free, not to be inhibited. So if leaning inhibits you, then there's a strong school of thought that says, well, what are you doing that for? Now because we don't know, and because we're in doubt, and because we want to fill the halacha properly, so therefore we should lean. But if Torah gives you dispensation, no, you don't. I'm sorry?
If more of your wine goes over yourself.
More of your wine definitely goes over yourself when you're leaning. And more of your matzah ends up all over the place other than your mouth when you're leaning.
You can have even the wine, you're not filling.
Dan, you figure it out. You know, okay. This can be done. It doesn't say you have to lean like falling off your head. You know, you lean a little, but it's also okay. It's doable. All right, so that's the story with our women, whether they should lean or not. Now comes the question, Ben Eitzel Aviv. This is already a smaller question. And like the Mefarshim that say that women were inhibited in front of their husbands, so once upon a time, children were inhibited in front of the parents. Today, parents are terrified of the children. Maybe the Shaila, the father should lean in front of his kids. But once upon a time, children had respect, and therefore the question was, Ben Eitzel Aviv, Boi Heseba. What the Gemara says, yes, you must lean. Why must you lean? Because that's the right thing to do. That's the freedom thing, and they're not so inhibited, and that's why it would be okay, it would be appropriate. The Gemara comes and asks, Bayaluhu, I understand the child by a father. Talmid Eitzel Rabbi Mai, what about a student, a disciple, by his primary teacher? Toshma, so the Gemara says, okay, let's check this out. Omer Rabbi Abaye said, Kiavina Beimar, Zaginin Avrichi Dahadodi. When we were at Mar, at the Rabbi, our teacher, we were sitting at a long bench, and we were packed in over there like sardines. And nobody got a chair in by himself. We had to lean. So what did we lean? We leaned on each other. Think of like a cafeteria style. Everybody sitting over there, oh, everybody leaned, sorry, to the left. Everybody's leaning like this. I don't know, the last guy gets leaned on the wall. And that's how they fulfill the Seba. Oh, what do we see from that story? Abai is saying. He says, Kiasino lebei Rav Yosef, Amalon letzichasa. You don't have to, he said. You don't have to do that. Even though they weren't so comfortable doing it, they had to do it, they did it. He said, you don't have to. Why? He said, Meir Rabach Meir Shamayim. The Mishnah says that the awe you should be in front of your Rebbe is like in front of Hashem. And we learned that from the story, the whole story with Yehoshua. I mean, this is like, to be in awe of your Rebbe. How could you sit and relax? You have to be inhibited in front of a Rebbe. So therefore, the reclining is not required. Mesve. Imakol adam mesev. The Gemara says, one second, let me ask you a question here. It says a person is always going to recline. Vafila tamad etzal rabbi. Even a disciple by his teacher. So you just told me a moment ago to be Yosef said you don't have to. Says the Gemara, ki tanya. You know when we learned that? Hayi b'shulya de nagri. That's talking about the apprentice. The storied, fabled apprentice. Once upon a time, he was an apprentice. The apprentice was in mortal fear of his teacher. But still, that's not Kermayda Shemai. It's not Kermayda Shemai. Take fear, and there has to be respect, and that's appropriate, but not the kind of fear, not the kind of awe that one exhibits in front of the teacher of Torah. So that Rebbe is not talking about the teacher of Torah, that's talking about the master. The master chef, the master carpenter, the master shoemaker, the master blacksmith, etc., etc. The mother says, what about Hashamish? What about the waiter? So it's Toshma, the Amid of Shulman Levi. Hashamish, Sha'achal Kazayas Matzah, Kishu Mesev, Yotzah, the Shamish, Oed, Kazayas Matzah. When he's leaning, he fulfills it. Mesev in, Lay Mesev, Lay. It's clear. When he's leaning. The mother says, that's a good proof. Shmamina, from this we can hear unequivocally, Boy Heseba, that the Heseba would be required. That, my dear friends, is the story. Your positions are basic.